And we would say, and that would be my very special guest in studio with me today, Mr. Lawrence G. Stallings.
See that,
you got,
Mom?
You got
See
such
that,
a powerful Mom? Name, Lawrence Grant Stallings. They gave you a name like Chief Justice Lawrence Grant Stallings. This is the L.A. County Prosecutor, Mr. Lawrence Grant Stallings. And here we have the very handsome, very talented Lawrence G. Stallings, who is an actor, who is a director, is a producer. Tell us about this play and how you got involved with When My Mind. It's called When My Mañana Comes.
My Mañana Comes.
My Mañana Comes.
Yes. My Mañana Comes, written by Elizabeth Irwin. It's a wonderful play about four busboys in New York City. Two of them are immigrants. Mm-hmm. One of them is American-born, but he's Mexican. Mm-hmm. And then I play Peter, who is black, mm-hmm. because I am black.
No!
And, you know, it's basically the story about how these four guys are navigating life with the circumstance is that, you know, they're making a very small amount of money to live off of. Mm-hmm. Two of them have left everything that they knew, every creature comfort, as we were talking about before, their family, mm-hmm. their friends, to come to America to, you know, provide a better life for their family and to send money back. And then you have two characters who are doing the same thing, but they're here. Mm-hmm. And the dynamics of the play, just, you know, with these four guys, it's really palpable when you start to think about, you know, what does it mean to sacrifice? Truly, mm-hmm. you know, because everyone's story, you can't compare sacrifice. It's like you can't compare, you know, my trauma is worse than your trauma. Mm-hmm. Trauma is trauma. Sacrifice.
And people
is sacrifice.
Always want to trump each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can't. I found that a long time ago. You cannot do that. So, you know, you have these four guys, and it's Jorge, Pepe, Waleed, and Peter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jorge and Pepe they're illegal immigrants, mm-hmm. you know, and they've sacrificed just as much, but it's a different sacrifice, mm-hmm. as Peter and Waleed. And you know, they are good friends, mm-hmm. until...
Don't give it away.
No, I'm not. But until they, you know...
Not good friends
until
anymore.
Until they're not good friends
How about
anymore.
That? We'll just...
Yes.
We'll
leave it there.
So now, what drew you to this piece?
When I read the piece, I remember reading it and thinking, oh, this is a cool story. It's four guys, you know, they get along really well, and it's kind of just showing a slice of life, mm-hmm. you know, hardworking. Peter's a family man, you know, he has a young daughter, mm-hmm. that he's trying to support. Each of the guys has something that they're living for. Waleed, mm-hmm. is the dreamer. He wants to be better. But I'm reading it, and I'm halfway through it, and I'm like, well, what is the conflict? Like, what's going on in their world? Mm-hmm. And then you turn the page, and it's like a fist jumps out of the page and punches you in the throat. It's that real. And when that happened, I was like, I have to be a part of this.
Yeah, when you get punched in the throat from a piece, yeah, you pretty much, after you get your win back, you go, oh, okay.
And then it's over. Mm-hmm. It's 90 minutes, it's a short play, and it doesn't wrap everything up in a nice little bow. It forces you to...
Uh-oh.
Have a conversation.
You gotta think. Yeah. You have to think. Well, and there's dialogue afterwards.
Yeah, when you walk out of this, you're definitely gonna have a conversation. Mm-hmm. If we did our jobs right, mm-hmm. you're gonna
Not
have
if,
a conversation.
Because we do
our jobs right, you will have a conversation all the way out of the theater and all the way home.
And we need to have that. And people don't want to talk about. They want to kick the can of this can down the road about immigration.
Man.
And we see how it's polarized the country with this presidential election.
Absolutely.
Coming up. And I am just flabbergasted that this country is as spastic as it is as far as our immigrant, our immigration laws are concerned. Now, you got 50-11 laws on the books about immigration, but then you got some guy that wants to run for the president and say, we just going to build a wall
right.
and just keep them all out. Excuse me?
You know what I think is
Aren't you married to an immigrant?
Right.
Shut up, mother love.
You know what I think is the cure, though, for all of that? Personal experience. You know, you can say what you like and what you don't, mm-hmm. like, what you tolerate and what you don't tolerate from a distance.
Until you experience it
personally, things change, you know, and that's across the gamut. That's no
Whatever.
Matter what issue.
You look at the just now with how they're talking about the heroin epidemic, you know, and how, you know, the past 15 years, the heroin epidemic has just gotten completely out of control. And who is mostly affected by the heroin epidemic? upper class, upper middle class Caucasian people, their kids.
Because heroin ain't cheap.
Heroin is not, and they're getting a cheaper version of
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
You know, and it's far more potent. Yeah. You know, look, we had a crack epidemic, you know, and we see the ramifications of that. Also, we have to take personal responsibility.
Yeah.
Because just because they put crack in your neighborhood doesn't give you carte blanche to go and become a crackhead.
That's true.
And we don't take the personal responsibility. And we did not take the personal responsibility for this immigrant issue. They were allowing people to come here illegally. I take offense that they just want to pick on Mexico.
Absolutely.
You know, they said, oh, it's just a Mexican, you know, y'all better get off of my brown brothers and sisters.
And that's what our show, that's specifically what our show deals with. And I'm, and as a,
the
as
fact a, that it's not just Mexico.
Well, no, it is.
That they, it is Mexico are, yeah, and how they, badly and they're treating people.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times people don't understand immigrants that come here, like, to leave your family, to leave, like, it's,
everything you
everything
know.
Everything you have. Everything you know, everything you love,
to go
sacrifice
someplace.
That, to go someplace as where you know nothing, you know you don't know the language. You don't have you don't have means to work. You're literally coming on a wing and a prayer.
That's it.
But how desperate
and a prayer,
right? How desperate must you be to do that? And I think that that's the side of the argument that we
don't
as Americans
see.
Don't see. And that's the wonderful thing that
is
this play
is
illuminates.
Is it that we don't see it, Lawrence, or we don't want to see it?
I think it's a little bit of both. Okay. I think that there's, we don't want to see it, but I think we just don't even think. We're so focused on, well, they're taking our jobs. They're not taking your job. Because were you going to go bag groceries at the Associated? No, you weren't.
See.
You would have turned your nose up to that job. See. That's the job that they're going to take. That's the reality.
Are you going to go in there? Listen, and they, you know, and especially, you know, people of color, they'll say things like, well, they're taking our jobs. And I went like, when did I see you in a strawberry patch?
Exactly.
When were you out there pulling up bell peppers?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, you didn't even want to pick cotton when you was forced to do it. So you know we don't want to go out there now. Nah, this is why black people don't want to go swimming. We didn't like that first boat ride over here. You know?
Absolutely.
So, and to pretend like we... Americans, let me tell you, I say this to every American citizen. It should be your responsibility to travel abroad.
Absolutely.
Get your passport.
Absolutely.
And take your behind outside of the... Matter of fact, you don't even have to go outside the United States. Go to West Virginia. Go to Appalachia. You know, go up there in the mountains, go up there in the Smoky Mountains and see where these young people are not eating well, are not, are living in shacks, don't have running water right here in
right
the United
right
States.
Yeah.
Right here, right now, in this country where we have such an abundance. We got a childhood obesity problem, but we got kids starving.
Right.
Tell me where that's making any kind of sense. But we want to blame it on the Mexicans. It's all their fault. They're taxing our health care system.
We like to do this.
And point
like
fingers
to,
at
yeah,
you.
We like
it's
to
all
that.
Your fault.
We like
you know,
to do that.
You know, it's my mama's fault. It's my daddy's fault.
Right.
We can't blame them anymore. They did. We'll blame it on the Mexicans.
Who next?
We'll blame it on the women. We'll blame it on the Muslims. We don't like anybody. We just hate everybody. We're just going to go eat worms. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
We pray on those who we think are weak. And see, that's why I think a lot of these Republicans is having a hard time, because our Latino brothers and sisters are raising up.
That's true.
And they're banding their resources
that's
and pulling
true.
Their resources together. And they're talking about, they must be stopped. Oh, really?
You can only kick someone for so long.
After a while, I'm going to grab your foot.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what's happening. But yeah, it just comes down to, I really believe that it's all about perspective. And if you don't have one, then you don't really... You don't have an informed opinion about anything. You just kind of jump on the bandwagon. This play allows the audience to see four different perspectives on one single issue. And it does do a mind trick on you, because you're like, oh, I'm right with you. But I'm right over here. And I don't know where to be.
Because we are not one dimensional
That's
in our
true.
Thinking, in our feelings. We're multifaceted.
That's
and
true.
For us to continue to keep trying to put, you know, we're going to put you in this group, or we're going to put you in this group, and you've got to fit this mold. Listen, it's two kinds of us. I'm just telling you, it's two kinds. I know y'all want to make a third kind, but it's not. I'm here to tell you the truth. There are male and female, him and her, she and he. After that, you just putting labels on everybody that's else. True. You just slapping a label on them, and that's just a way to control the masses.
It is.
You know, when you got to sit up in the 21st century, make sexist and racist comments, and you think that's supposed to do something to people. See, we got to take the sting out of this stuff.
We do,
and realize this is why I know that the theater and the entertainment industry and music and arts is critical to the survival of human beings.
It is absolutely.
Period.
I like to say that I do this to teach people how to love each other mm-hmm. better. If you can tell a story so well that it causes someone to think differently about what they just saw.
Feel differently.
You know, what they saw, what they heard, what mm-hmm. they, you know, whatever it is. Then you're doing something right, because they will then take that experience and maybe they will encounter someone who is similar to or it reminds them of, and they will love them differently, mm-hmm. hopefully better, you know, because they've had that experience.
We need that. You know, I when I first came here, I had never ever seen as many homeless people as I saw downtown LA.
Yeah.
And the first time I just started crying.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute, this is not right. And I got out the car and I'm trying to hug all the people. My husband's like, get your crazy self back in the car. You don't know. What if one of them bites you? I'm going to bite them back.
Right.
These are human beings. These are somebody's children. And you can't save everybody, and everybody That's doesn't true. Want to be saved.
But
you gotta try.
But you see that they were once
yes.
someone's child.
This was
with
somebody's
all the
baby.
Potential in the world. And life has happened. Maya Angelou had a great quote, and I'm gonna paraphrase it, but it's basically saying, you know, we are all part of the human species. Mm-hmm. Therefore, nothing a human being can experience can be foreign to us.
It can't.
Nothing. So the very worst that a human can do, given the same situation, circumstances, you can do. And conversely, the very best that a human can do, you can do. And what that does is it allows us to see those that we might think have let, you know, let their lives just spiral into, you know, a horrible
place. Oblivion.
Right. But there with the grace of God go out.
Hey!
You know, if you look at them and you realize that at one point they were an infant, they were happy, they were smiling, and maybe they didn't have the parents that you have, mm-hmm. and one thing led to another, and now this is who they are. But we
or this is where they are.
This is where they are. But we lose the ability to see that. Mm-hmm. What we see is what the person is right in front of us. We don't see past that.
So, Laura, I mean, you are younger than I am. I probably have shoes older than you. Do you think that it, and my concern is for the generations behind me, and what kind of footprints am I going to leave, and what's going to be my mark? You know, I am concerned about what my legacy will be.
Right.
So it's important that I do all that I can. And what I see is we're losing our sense of compassion, just human compassion. I don't have to love you. I can respect you.
Right.
I can love you as another human being. I don't have to agree with everything. Right. I don't agree with everything my husband's saying. I like him today.
Right, right, right.
Notice I said today.
Today.
Tomorrow could be a different story. I just go day
wake
by
up
day.
And see.
That's wake up and see. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery.
Right,
let me
right.
work on this present right now. So today, I love him with my heart.
That's
He's
fun.
Such a good man. You know, yesterday, I loved him yesterday.
Right.
Tomorrow, I don't know. But we seem to be losing our compassion as a young person, and especially as a young black man in the arts. When you see all of this craziness that's going on, what does it do for you as an artist? And how do you keep yourself on the straight and narrow and keep yourself focused so that all these things don't distract from you?
Right.
Because it's so easy to get distracted.
You know, fortunately, the artists, I believe, are some of the most open-hearted people. And so to be in this profession, I'm constantly being surrounded by and meeting people who I would say are part of my tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who do have compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there are more of us out there I believe that, you know, a lot of times we feel very vulnerable and so we don't speak up. But I believe that even now, there is still a great number of people who want better, not just for themselves, but for other people. Mm-hmm. And I just focus on that. You know, like you said, you wake up every day and take it as it comes. Mm-hmm. I try very, very hard to focus on all of the positive things that are going on in a day, because it's real easy to focus on the negative, you know. And
see, yeah. When you get to be my age, when you get to be seasoned like me, we are just glad to be awake. I'm glad to be above the ground. I'll open up my eyes and thank God for Jesus. Thank you, Lord. I know I pissed Satan off the note. That heifer up again. Mm-hmm. God, though. Why is she happy?
And she happy too?
Yeah. I'm like, please go somewhere else.
Yeah.
There's a reason why there's a scripture that says, get thee behind me, Satan, because you getting ready to eat some dust today. So just back it up and go find somebody else, because I'm not the one.
Yeah.
And we have to, I believe that every day that we're allowed to take breath, we should make sure we breathe life and share it with other people.
Yeah.
You don't have to know them. I don't have to know somebody to speak to them, to say hello, to give them. And I'm a hugger. Well, you could tell I'm a hugger.
Yeah, yeah.
I come out. Look, we got to walk up 900 flights of steps just to get to the radio. I saw Lawrence. I'm like, okay, he young, he strong. Okay, let me just hold on to him for a minute. But you know what's really funny? I don't even break a sweat coming up the stairs.
No, not at all.
Not at all. And I'm I'm dramatic.
You could have
sprinted up here.
If you, and
okay,
that's
a hey.
Okay, I won't tell everybody.
I'm built for comfort.
She's
I ain't built for all that.
She's ready.
I ain't built for all that. Look, I'm built for comfort. I ain't built for speed. You see me running, see if the police behind me.
Yeah.
Because only place I'm running is to and from the
bathroom.
You know,
it's funny. I try not to even walk up. Like, you know how you can be on the street and there's like a stairs and then there's like a ramp. The ramp. I try not to walk up the ramp because I'm like, thank you, God, that these legs are working. And I'm taking these two steps.
We got feet.
You know what I mean?
We got feet. We got legs. I think that's sight.
I think that's the key, though. The moment you take for granted
anything,
how blessed you are, whatever it is the moment that you start spiraling in the wrong direction.
When you start thinking you're bigger than that,
or you're entitled to it, or you know, the moment you lose gratitude, it's a wrap. It's a wrap.
And people don't understand that. When you see the... We got to take a break. We're here having just too much fun with Lawrence G. Stallings. Mrs. Stallings, thank you very much. We're very pleased to know that he's a good-looking guy, and we know how you get good-looking kids, and we also know how you make ugly babies. You go too fast. They didn't go too fast. They took their time making him, I'm telling you. Just because I'm married don't mean I'm blind. I know good-looking when I see good-looking, and we'll be back after these messages.
The Nefertiti of the needy, the defender of the tender, worldwide appeal with a hometown Phyllis mother love. You in good hands, you in good hands, you in good hands. Listening to the Mother Love Show on LATalkRadio.com.
Lifestyles. I'm Bobby Owens. Type 2 diabetes is more likely to affect minority populations, including African Americans and Latinos. Mother Love, TV personality and author, has type 2 diabetes and knows firsthand how to deal with it.
To manage diabetes successfully, you must keep a positive attitude and build a strong support team. Make sure you monitor your blood glucose levels often, exercise daily, eat well, and stay informed.
Mother Love says a healthy and balanced diet is very important.
You don't have to skip out on the barbecues, but you do need to watch what you eat. Choose healthy and fresh foods like seasonal fruits and vegetables, lean proteins, and always practice portion control. For snacks, try Glucerna Nutrition Products. The great-tasting shakes, snack bars, and cereals are formulated to minimize blood sugar spikes when used as a part of a diabetes management plan.
Use Glucerna products under medical supervision. For more information, visit Glucerna.com. That's Lifestyles from the makers of Glucerna. I'm Bobby Owens.
Are you ready to be that person? The person who walks into the room and everyone pauses and says, "Where did that outfit come from?" Well, the only way to be that person is that you're wearing skin-toned clothing. Skin-toned clothing is 100% natural, hand-woven, raw cotton. And and skin tone clothing lays on your skin like no other material. It offers elegance, comfort, and style. So if you're ready to be that person, then shop www.skintone-clothing.com. That's www.skintone-clothing.com. And at your next party, be that person. Skin Tone Clothing, for the skin you're in.
You are now listening to LA Talk Radio, where we can just say what we want. You are now listening to LA Talk Radio, where we can just say what we want.
You have got to come back on my program
anytime,
because you are a blast.
I am having a ball.
It's a good thing you good looking, because he's sick and twisted, people. Just let me tell you. Now, you've gotten the opportunity to do a lot of different things.
Yes.
And to, you know, to do television, you know, to do this play. Tell people how when the play is running, where it is, how they can get tickets,
yes,
everything.
Absolutely. So the play is at the Fountain Theater in Hollywood. We are running through June 25th. It might be the 26th. And we are there Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. And Monday is Pay What You Can. So for those of you on a budget, come on Monday.
Wait, back that up.
Yeah.
Pay what you can?
Pay what you can.
So if I only got $5,
come
I
on.
Could come to the play, Lord?
Absolutely.
What if I got $4.25?
Bring it.
I could come with the $4.25?
Bring it.
So there is no excuse.
There's no
excuse. What do you all, because it is focused on four guys who are in the same position, they're working minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're bus boys in this
right.
fancy restaurant, so you get to see, you know, how the what they say, how the other half lives.
Right.
And then you kind of want that. What do you want your audience to walk away from with this piece?
I really want people to walk away with a perspective that gives them a little bit more compassion for the people that they encounter when they wherever they go, whether it be a restaurant, mm-hmm. whether it be the movies, the person that's tearing your ticket and directing you to the theater, whether it's the car wash, mm-hmm. you know. I think in order for us to change this world, we first have to respect each mm-hmm. other. And it's hard to respect someone. Well, it shouldn't be, but it seems like it's hard to respect someone if you don't have a perspective about how they live, and you don't really get to see
a true perspective.
Because
people have perspectives about service people. Some people feel like service people are beneath them.
That's true.
And that's why I always say, I am a service person.
Right.
And I this is what I'm here for, to be of service, however I can be of service. Right. I tell people all the time, let me be the last one you worry about.
Right.
You know, if I tell you a butterfly dips snuff, look under his wing for the box. That's all you got to do.
Right.
And we don't have that sense of importance. We don't have that sense of commitment anymore. We don't have that sense of, you know, my word is my bond. You know, I'm just going to look down at what you waiting tables, clean
right.
off the table. You don't look me in the face. I remember when I was working at this TV show, and I'm not going to call a woman's name.
Okay.
I dropped names. Oh, okay. Put them on blast. Only reason I'm not calling her name, because she does not deserve to have my name come out of her mouth, because she's not a nice person.
Right.
And we were walking through the hallways, and she was telling people, you know, I don't want you all looking at me when I walk down the hallway. I'm a star, and I don't want you looking at me. I was like, you ain't nothing to look at.
Right.
You know? And I was like, I'm going to look at you.
She had already fallen down that slope.
She had already gone down the slope. So she tells the executive producer, and I used to be a really large woman, and I'd never had a problem with being a large woman.
Uh-huh.
Now, it wasn't my thing. And she goes to the executive producer, and she tells the executive producer, I'm never coming back on this show. If that fat bee is going to be here, I just can't stand her. I told her, don't look at me in my eye. She looks at me like she thinks she's better than I am. And I'm not going to come back on this show again if she's here. I know she just thought this man was just gold, you know, because she played the race card.
Right, right, right.
Well, I guess this will be your last day with us.
Bam. Bam.
Her face
cracked.
Turned 11. Talk about they calling us colored people. Her face turned red, blue, pink, green, orange. Then she got a few blue dots on her neck when she broke out. And I was like, get away from me. I don't know if that's contagious.
Right.
And she was fit to be tied. I'm not the one.
Yeah.
And she just thought she was so much better than just anybody.
And we're not better than anybody. I mean, that is the reality. The reality is you can think that. You can have all of your items, your house, your cars, and everything that you think proves that fact. But the reality is we are not better than anyone.
Now, did you
some
get
of us
that,
are more fortunate.
Did you get that growing up when you were, you know, living in Detroit? You
know? I did. You know,
you think you better than everybody else.
I would never forget this, and this is going to embarrass me, but I'm going to tell the story because we moved to the suburbs. We moved from Detroit and we moved to Southfield. And
I know Southfield, yeah, very ritzy area. Yeah.
And so I'm standing like on my lawn or something like that, and somebody rode by on a bike and they got on the grass or something. And I guess I made a comment like, get off our grass. My dad, who was 6'5", I will never forget this. He grabbed me by my shirt and lifted me all the way up to his face and said, I'm not raising a snob. And then he sat me down. And I had to be like 6, maybe 7. And it was
I got checked.
And I'm the kind of dude, you only got to check me once.
That's it.
You know, especially if you're 6'5". You know what I mean?
You ain't got to whoop me but one time about
that. For that thing.
Might be a new thing.
Right. You know, and it was just like, it was very clear. Mm-hmm. First of all, you're not paying any of this mortgage.
Right.
This is not
and
your
you
grass.
And you don't fix this lawn.
Right. This is not your grass. You know, and but it just let me know, like, I was way out of line. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, get back in your lane.
Immediately.
Get back in your lane.
And listen, this is however many years later, you still remember that vividly.
I do.
This is how important your father is in your life, how important it is to have your mother in your life. You know, my mother used to fuss at us all the time. My father died. He didn't leave. He didn't go off. Okay. The man dropped dead. He was 31 years old. My mother had 6 kids at 30. And she never remarried. And we had to listen. That's why your father dropped dead on me. Left me here with all 6 of y'all. I ain't getting on the welfare.
She was like, he's not here, but I'm going to use him to help raise these kids.
Oh, my God. She would tell us, this is a totalitarian dictatorship. We're the only people in the projects that getting punished and getting the crap beat out of us, and we got to have a dictionary, a Roger's thesaurus, and a Bible.
Right.
And you had to have a Rosicrucian. We didn't even know what the heck that was, but you got get your Rosicrucian and look at him like, what? Because she would put my mother was more fierce than any father could be. Mm. And there were times she channeled my mother been dead 20-something years. I'm still scared of her. I'm just keeping it real because that's what she poured into us.
Right.
To, you know, don't you go out there and embarrass me.
Right.
But did you get that? You know, you think you're better than everybody else because you speak well and you want to do all these things and we don't do these kinds of things, you know, because I lived in the projects, grew up in the projects.
Yes. You know, I guess because my mother grew up in the projects, you know, and my dad did not. And then we were like, you know, a middle class family, you know, but they were.
Your daddy went and got him a round the way girl.
But what was interesting, I guess, me growing up, like, I'm in public school in the suburbs, but, you know, I'm from Detroit. So, like, I'm in public school, but then on the weekends, I'm on the west side, I'm on the east side, or I'm in, you know, southwest Detroit, where it's a very different life, you know. So my perspective was always well-rounded because
you could fit into any kind of
and
environment.
I had to.
And
you I had to because that's how you survive. Right. My dad worked in Highland Park, which was a really, really tough place. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I remember being dropped off. My dad worked for the Detroit News, and I had a paper route, and he dropped me off in Highland Park with maybe 200 papers and was like, see you in 3 hours. You know, and I was like,
wait, dude,
what are you doing? This is Highland Park. And I think he was very adamant about, first of all, instilling in me to not be afraid of my own people,
right,
which is very important, and also how to adapt in all environments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you living in the suburbs, but I want to make
how
sure
you
that you
hang
know how
over
to
here and carry yourself.
Exactly, because when I got to New York or when I lived in Atlanta, you know, all that comes into play. Mm-hmm. You know, you have these kids that are moving to cities and they think, "Oh, just because I'm in Atlanta and I'm going to school, this is a city."
Right.
You need to know how to live in a city. You know, you need to know how to get off that martyr and tuck your gold chain inside
your
jacket
so you don't get jacked.
So you can keep your gold chain. This is stuff that, you know, you have to be taught, you know.
Right.
And So I didn't
get that perspective. Yeah. You know, that's what's so important, getting that perspective. That's why I believe it's important that I think my goal is to, this year we're getting all of our grandchildren passports because I'm taking them out of the country.
It's so important.
Because I want them to see. You know, I take them, when I took them downtown to show them homeless people, I said, I want you to see this is what could happen to you when you don't get your education. Some of these people have education. Mm-hmm. Some of these people are strung out on drugs. She said, well, why would anybody want to be homeless? I said, would you want to be homeless?
Right.
And they went, no. And our youngest grandchildren are six. So we got a 14-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a set of 6-year-old twins. So we got all of these different ages that we got to, bring the children. Okay. Come get these kids.
You know, right?
Come get these kids. They done got them a nerd now, but they don't get on my
nerve. To get out of the country is so important.
But to get
important.
Out of the country, out of the environment. Yeah. And I don't ever want them to feel like they have to fit in a box.
Absolutely.
To be able to get along with society. I want them to be able to be viable, productive members of society.
But be box free.
But be box free.
That's my new thing. I'm going to be box free.
We box free. I've been box free. Yeah. I done upset the box, sunk the boat, turned the apple cart over, threw the apples at the people. And they forgot to bring me. You know how you came out here to California, mm-hmm. you know, to do your thing. You went to New York.
Right.
I was minding my own business. They sent for me to come to California.
See.
They sent me a first class plane ticket. They gave me a brand new car. They gave me a furnished apartment. They gave me a stack full of money. I'm like, okay, who I got to sleep with to keep this?
Right.
Y'all know I got a husband, right? I'll sleep with him to get to the top. You just tell me what you need me to do, and I'll sleep with him when you get there. And they brought me here, and they forgot to give me the Hollywood handbook.
Mm.
So I came out with
it. It wouldn't have worked for you anyway.
Anyway,
the Hollywood handbook ain't for
you. Know what I done did? I done wrote it up.
We got a manual.
You know,
they got a handbook. We got a pamphlet.
I didn't even get the pamphlet. Yeah. They just let me loose. They said, sit here. Talk on the radio. I was like, okay. Okay.
Okay.
And that was back in the 80s.
But here you are.
And here I'm still standing. Tell people again about the play.
My Mañana Comes, the Fountain Theater. We're now running through the end of June. And we're also a part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival as well. Monday nights, pay what you can. No excuses. Come on out and get a little perspective and have fun.
Now, before we go, this is this will be the last question for this conversation.
Okay.
When it's all said and done, and you turn around and you look at Lawrence Grant Stallings' life, what do you want your legacy to be? Or have you even gotten to that point yet?
I have. I've gotten there. Simply, he loved. That's why I'm here. Everybody has a purpose.
Okay, I'm glad this is over because you can't be breaking up the host. Then they give you the memo. You can't break the host up. That is so beautiful.
He loved.
Lawrence,
yeah.
It has been my distinct honor and pleasure
to chat
with you. Please know that you're welcome, whatever you're working on, whatever you're doing. May the universe continue to open up and conspire for your great success and all those you love. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lawrence Grant Stallings. Thank you, Mrs. Stallings. I hope I made you proud. And we'll be back.